You're listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. This show will give you the tools and information for better health as you age. Now, here's your host, Kendra Vallone.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another show of Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is board certified in pulmonary medicine, internal medicine, and with advanced training in anti-aging, Dr. Larry Emder.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you so much.
Good. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, Saturday. You should be happy to be here. I understand you are back from a trip to Cabo.
I am. So I guess it's hard to say that I'm happy to be here because it would be so nice to be back where I was. Cabo was a lot of fun.
What did you do?
This is actually, I should preface that by saying this was a bachelorette party, right?
Oh.
As I don't know if some of our listeners know, I spilled the beans earlier. Like, I am already married.
For
religious purposes, you know.
And you're going to get remarried.
We're getting remarried. So
it's the same guy, though.
Secret. It is. Unfortunately for him. But,
Lucky guy.
You can tell him that. I'm going to bring him back over to your house. But we did it because, like I said, you know, religious purposes, and he's not from this country either, so it worked out. Now, this is all secret, so I'm going to tell the public world about this on the radio right now, but I think it's safe in San Diego. Anyway, so now is our year to do all the crazy stuff that happens for a regular wedding. And one of which is the bachelorette party.
Oh, this is your bachelorette
this
party.
This was the bachelorette party. Did I say bachelorette party?
But it was for you.
It was for me.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, this is what, who else was going?
I thought you went for your girlfriend's bachelorette party.
Oh, no. This was for me. So
nice.
Yeah.
How many bachelorettes?
There were six. Well, I'm the only bachelorette, but there were six of us.
Okay.
And I done with the days of the craziness, I would like to say. You know, I always felt like if you want your bachelorette party to be crazy and Vegas, then maybe you're not ready to settle down. And that's so stereotypical. I probably shouldn't say that. And at the same time, where am I going in a couple weeks for another trip when all the Australians come out? Yeah, we're going
to
Vegas. That's kind of a silly statement for me to make. But at the same time, I got to enjoy it. We went to an all-inclusive resort, and it was, you know, all you can eat, drink, dance your little heart away. It was a good time. And the weather was good, except one day it did rain a lot, so I didn't get to enjoy.
What about, are we talking any golf or scuba diving?
Yeah,
these are your passions.
With six girls, if I were to have brought my clubs, they would have been like, turn around and get back on the plane. So, no, unfortunately, that didn't happen, though. There was a really nice golf resort down the way. And we were going to scuba dive. I brought all my gear.
Wow, that's a lot of work. You need scuba?
Okay, so when I say bring my gear, like
I have the fins, the mask,
snorkel, that kind of stuff. I'm not quite at the level where I need my own regulator. Though when you borrow somebody else's regulator, you know, you've got like the
kind of icky
saliva. Yeah, not my thing. But anyway, so we didn't end up going because it was very, it was rainy. And you can't really scuba dive in the rain. It's probably not, you know, healthy, and you can't see very far in front of you.
So what I remember about Cabo, the one time I was there, is it's kind of right at the tip of the Baja, and the currents there are kind of treacherous.
They were.
And you have to be really careful.
Yeah, we got warned about that, that it was, you know, kind of scary. If you're going out, don't go right in front of the hotel, like go down to the left, and they were trying to outline it for us all. But then this tropical storm comes in and everybody in the rooms are notified. You know, you get something under your door saying, you know, hi, welcome to this resort. By the way, tropical storm such and such it's on its way. So enjoy a massage. Not complimentary, obviously, but yeah.
When I bought my my first house, I had the contract. It was in my wife's purse.
Mm-hmm.
And I went fishing. I normally do on vacation.
Always.
And she went with the kids for a walk on the beach. And I explained to her that the surf is very dangerous and stay away from the surf. So she tells me later, she's walking 30 feet back from the surf.
Mm-hmm.
A wave comes in, knocks her over, knocks my kids over. And the current is so strong, it can pull them out to the sea. Luckily, you know, she was able to get everything together. But
did she save the contract?
She saved the contract, but when we went to sign it, the ink had all run down.
Oh no!
So they had never seen a contract where the ink had everything had just drained. But that's my remembrance of Cabo. So stay out of the water. They have
except it's pretty and it was warm. I put a toe in.
Yeah, well, you have to know the city. On one side, the water, the currents are fine, but on the another side, they're quite treacherous and dangerous. And you know, I went to the owners of the hotel. And I said, you know, don't you warn anybody? They go, hey, we don't worry about those things in Mexico.
No.
Yeah, everything's at your own risk.
Yeah, it's super different down there.
So, you know, I'm actually going to go on a trip this week. I'm heading to, what's the name of that place? Bordeaux, France, for some wine tasting.
Yeah, you might. I think, I don't fully want to admit it, but I think your trip trumps my trip.
Well, then from there, we're going to go to the Vatican, and I'm going to release all my sins.
I've been there.
Yeah, and
those
I'm
are
Jewish,
my
so
from. Yeah,
I don't know how I'm going to get rid of them at the Vatican. That might not quite work.
Yeah, you've got problems. But good luck with that.
Yeah.
I'll say a prayer for you.
And then I'm going on the Dave Cruz cause, Dave Cause cruise from Rome to Sicily, then to Greece.
And which is the jazz cruise,
that's
right?
The jazz cruise.
Nice.
So, you know, what I was thinking, you know, this the name of the show is Aging Redefined.
Yes.
I think we should really change it to the Travel Channel.
Travel or Nutrition Channel.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know. I always have to, I feel like I have to kind of preface this for our audience listeners out there, but the show is really about healthy aging.
Right.
And as we're, you are constantly traveling. I mean,
since
the show's inception, I think where have you been? Alaska? Where else did you go? Where'd you go right before then? You went on a trip. You did another fishing trip.
Yeah, we're always, you know, always visiting the grandchildren. Always with the grandchildren, either you know, in Mammoth.
You've been all over the place.
I have a son in Boulder, so.
And now Europe.
Yeah, so I mean, this is all part of healthy aging: is to travel and reduce, you know, your stress.
Stress levels.
Enjoy your life. So I work hard to basically. Get some time off.
And nutrition as well. Every guest that we have on ends up talking about, if we're trying to keep you healthy, nutrition, I can speak, does play a really big role in that. And
every guest, there's some.
Okay, but you are vegan, vegetarian, same thing, pescatarian. You weren't eating gluten for a while. Have we given up on the gluten thing? Are we eating?
Yeah,
gluten
we're
now?
Doing. We're doing a little bit of gluten, but not much. Like maybe one piece of bread a day. So we're not going crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Keeping it all in moderation.
So what do you have new for us in the news as far as health and healthy aging?
Well, here's one in kind of in. What's the word I'm looking for? You know, you're going to Bordeaux. So we'll talk about wine a little bit. Okay, so we've all heard that drinking a glass of red wine in moderation may be good for our health. But now researchers have found that drinking wine may also reduce the risk of depression. And
nice.
This was a study published in the journal BMC Medicine. So researchers from Spain analyzed like 2,600 men and 2,800 women over 7 years. And it was kind of for another study. I think they were conducting research around nutrition and cardiovascular risks. But all participants were between 55 and 80 years of age. No history of depression or alcohol-related problems when the study began. The findings of the study revealed that those who drank moderate amounts of alcohol, which was 5 to 15 grams a day, were less likely to suffer from depression over that long haul. So additionally, those who drink a moderate amount of wine on a weekly basis, which is 2 to 7 small glasses a week.
That's not per night.
Yeah, no, that's not per night.
And so I sound like a lot of alcohol to me.
Oh, man. We're found to have an even lower risk of depression. So 2 to 7 small glasses a week is okay. Should we be promoting this on the air?
I think that's fine. You know, there's really great nutrients in wine. Like, what are they? There's a huge amount of antioxidants.
Right.
There's something called resveratrol, which supposedly is an anti-aging compound, which researchers are trying to isolate.
Really?
Yeah, and it's
we would like continue to consume that, or would is that
no,
something we put on our face?
Well, wine right now, you know, I take a multivitamin that actually has that in it, and it's naturally found in wine,
which is why you look like you're 30.
Yeah, well, and that's no surgery too, by the way. That's no surgery on my face. There's been surgery on any other.
Look at you! You've got wrist.
Yeah.
Like wrist guards on for carpal tunnel and a knee.
Yeah, I have a knee brace. That's right. And at night I wear a neck brace and CPAP. But other than that, I'm really a cute guy during the day. At night, At night, I can turn out for any Halloween party just with what I'm wearing. That's a different story. That's not part of anti-aging. All right, let's get back. What else do you have for us?
Okay. Well, you had, what did you?
Oh, I do.
You had told me that you wanted to.
Actually, I've been trying to get this on the air for about a month. But, you know, we chit-chat so much. Mm. The latest and greatest is that the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force has recently recommended that heavy smokers be screened for lung cancer annually with a CT scan of the chest. Now, is new because it had never really been fully studied. But what they found is that people that are at high risk for lung cancer, these would be people over 50 that have a greater than 30-pack year history of smoking, that screening with a yearly CT scan, CAT scan, decreases the risk of dying from cancer, from lung cancer in particular. Hmm. This came out, I first saw this in the UT Health section. Let's see, this was in August 13th.
That's a bit dated.
About a week ago, I saw that the Sharp Health Plan has picked up on this. And they are going to be screening their members with the CT.
And so, and that would be part of like insurance, that's my
biggest question. Insurance would cover that. And they've come up with for cash, if you don't have insurance, they have a cash price of, I think, about $300, which sounds like a lot of money. But if you're going to diagnose an early cancer and increase your survival, it's a great bargain.
Oh, wow.
So the first thing we'd say is, if you don't smoke, don't start. If you do smoke, stop smoking. But if you if you're over 50 and you have a 30 pack year history of smoking, that would be a pack a year is one pack a day for a year. Over a 30 pack year history of smoking, you should. And I'm doing this with my patients. Get a yearly low dose radiation CT of the chest. And the advantage of the CAT scan is it picks up at a very early stage any nodules or early cancer. And your best chance of curing and saving the effects of cancer is to diagnose at an early stage. So you can take that to the bank.
That's really good information. It's kind of neat that Sharp has picked up on it.
Holy mackerel, we're almost done with our first segment.
I know, we're done with our time. But audience out there, stay with us. We have an awesome show for you today and talking about well-being and how to, back to healthy aging.
And volunteerism.
Yeah, a lot of stuff for volunteers. So stay with us after this message from our sponsor, VITAS Hospice, and we will be right back.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and had the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
No one wants to think about having a heart attack. But should you or a loved one need life-saving care, you want to go to a hospital that has a track record for saving lives. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist at Alvarado Hospital. As a designated San Diego Heart Attack Receiving Center, we recognize the importance of getting life-saving cardiac care. Our state-of-the-art cath labs offer life-saving treatment when you need it most. For information, visit alvaradohospital.com.
Alvarado Hospital is one of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to our show, Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, joined by my co-host, Dr. Larry Emder. And we have an awesome show today. As Aging Redefined is, we're pushing healthy aging and all the things that, encourage you to age in a healthy way. Okay. Anyway, Dr. Emder, go ahead.
So we have Alex Silva here today. And in his former life, he was a respiratory therapist, worked at acute care hospitals up in L.A., Tri-City here in San Diego area, and long-term care at Vencore, now Kindred Hospital. But that's his previous life. Today, he's a manager volunteer for VITAS, And he's a certified volunteer administrator. And he's with the hospital. He's on the board of the Hospice Volunteer Managers Association. I mean, I didn't even know this existed.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Wow. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you very, very much.
Tell us about volunteerism. I didn't even know this was a specialty.
I didn't either once upon a time. I have to say I wasn't a kid that, you know, dreamed growing up to manage volunteers and started in a clinical role of things in emergency room setting, doing respiratory therapy and sometimes just kind of questioning what we were doing and was that best appropriate. And so when I came to the world of hospice care, was the other end of the spectrum, and then volunteering kind of fell on my lap. Really a total conversation with our volunteer manager that happened to be retiring. We were doing a project in one of my nursing facilities that I partnered with.
Which I should say that you have worked at Villa Las Palmas,
absolutely,
which is in
absolutely
County over there.
Yeah, because it's
the best.
And so she was telling me she was retiring, and I was like, "Well, what do you do? Maybe I want to do your job." And so when she kind of started telling me that really it was everything focusing on people who wanted to help benefit our patients and their families as they were dealing with one of the most, you know, delicate times in their life, I thought, I think I want to be a part of that. And I had to kind of look internally at my previous roles as a volunteer in my own life and what motivated me to do that. Was it something that I really felt strongly about? And I really did. I think giving back to our community is one of the best ways to contribute to our society.
You start locally
and it really becomes something that's global from a small effort. So
yeah. Now, the amazing thing, this is actually this is a job for you. This is a funded position.
Absolutely.
That's just great. So you're like fulfilling some of your basic desires to help other people, but it's a career for you, isn't that right?
Exactly. And it's kind of funny. People will come to my office and they'll see, you know, volunteer manager, and they're like, "Wow, you're a volunteer?" It's like, no, I actually do get paid for this job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
I didn't even know that existed. That's great.
Yeah.
How do you find your volunteers? I mean, do you run an ad or do they just kind of walk through your front door? I mean, how does it happen?
There's a lot of different ways that we find volunteers. Online anymore is probably one of the best ways for us. There's a few different volunteer websites that are kind of clearing houses for all different types of organizations, whether they be government agencies, nonprofits, for-profits, across
the
board.
It's like a job hunt website?
Absolutely.
Like, but for...
Absolutely. You can narrow it down based on
your volunteers.
Skill, your age level, whatever you want to focus it down, and it'll find something
that's
right for you.
Is there a typical volunteer? I mean, is there an age group, male, female, or is it all comers?
It's across the board, and it kind of depends, I think, upon the organization and some of the programs that those organizations may have, where they are maybe trying to bring in a younger population of volunteers. Probably one of the global issues is male volunteering is not as high as people would like it to be. So you tend to see more females that are involved. I think most people think volunteering and they automatically think of everybody being retired.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah. Is it someone that's retired or?
Definitely not the case. For our organization, a majority of our volunteers are full-time employees or full-time students.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they're working it into their schedule. And I think that's part of our responsibility as well as an organization is to try to be as flexible, especially with, you know, everybody's day-to-day life and wanting to work that in and making it possible for them to do so.
Yeah, and we should know, I mean, volunteering is obviously being in this industry, I'm familiar with it because I feel like that's just something that we do for the love of it. But even going through school and going through high school, it becomes something, and not to look at it from a selfish perspective, but to get into college, that's on so many required applications now. You know, how many hours of volunteer service do you have? So anybody out there that's got kids coming through junior high or high school, it's something to be prepared for and to keep an eye out for opportunities. For that reason just alone, you know.
A lot of the high schools anymore require a certain amount of volunteers before the students can even graduate. So a lot of the school districts have actually comprised a list of volunteer opportunities that teenagers can actually get involved with, whether that be from like one day event like AIDS Walk or something like that to ongoing volunteer opportunities similar like what we have as a junior volunteer program where teens can come in and actually work directly with our patients or come into the office, you know.
You know, I know my my daughter-in-law has her children ages 3 and 2 volunteer at a soup kitchen.
Wow.
Just to teach them early on, you know, the value of volunteerism.
Right.
And those are great values. Why don't you, you know, talk about some of the benefits of for the people that volunteer.
Absolutely. I think that instilling volunteerism from the beginning, as young as an early age as possible, really helps to just build that foundation so that they want to do it and continue on into their adult life. Mm-hmm. People can, especially the younger generations, I should say, can really gain a lot of experience that way.
Oh,
whether
yeah.
it be on the job, something to put on a resume, to develop skills a little bit more. What we tend to do with VITAS in focusing with our younger volunteers is, you know, really tapping into their technology skills, you know, and being able to do some computer work for us, to create DVDs, to do video reviews, video life reviews, things along those lines.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really finding the strength or what somebody's skills are and trying to offer that back to that organization, mm-hmm. especially with a lot of the nonprofits that are not able to hire in someone. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have somebody that is skilled in creating flyers, something that simple, they mm-hmm. can go in there and create multiple flyers for them, whether it be education, volunteer recruitment, or just, you know, flyers to be able to distribute out into the community to let people know what that organization is all about. Mm-hmm. Something simple like that takes, you know, the younger generation a very, very short amount of time, but it's a really valuable tool for the organizations that don't have to pay somebody to do that.
Right.
There's also a lot of health benefits that are involved. People can come in and, you know, there are studies that have proven that it will reduce your depression. It will increase happiness in your life. You're going to be able to make connections with people in your community and form
nice.
Friendships. You know, there's
That's
really
huge.
A lot. Exactly. There's
yeah.
a lot
yeah.
more to just helping.
It's kind of like a warm, you know, like a warm feeling inside.
Well, exactly.
You know, I remember, I mean, Dr. Amdur, you're talking about your grandkids doing, you know, all of this volunteering, which just
it's amazing.
Blows my mind. It blows my mind that they are so young, but it's also so amazing because it gives you a whole new perspective on life. And the younger you get involved with that, the more you grow up and are able to see, you know, see it from different viewpoints. I remember being really young and my parents, when I say really young, I was probably in junior high, but my parents got a bunch of Ziploc bags, went to Costco and loaded them up with all different, you know, foods and maybe some, you know, bath products or deodorant. And we went downtown LA, which is where we were living in LA at the time, and handed them out. And just after that experience right there, it was just, you know, you realize how sheltered you are. And I'm sure a lot of people living in San Diego could say the same thing, but it's pretty impressive.
I had a similar situation when I was growing up. My family was very involved with our church. And we started collecting donations of clothes and food and toys. Mm-hmm. And I remember bringing in some friends, and they did not want to give up their Sundays or their Saturdays
right.
to go and do it, you know, and it seemed like more of a chore. But once we gathered everything together, and we actually would go down in a caravan, there were like 6 or 7 dually sized trucks full mm-hmm. of stuff. And we would go down into Mexico, and there were a couple of orphanages that we partnered with the church, and we would go and distribute. And so once they went down and saw that reward, like you mentioned earlier, people are coming in and it's not a monetary thing, reimbursement that they're looking for.
Right.
It's a completely mm-hmm. different level of reward that somebody is getting. And to see it in action like that can
wow.
really help, especially at a young age.
Well, I know, you know, I went to a Valley Forge Military Academy. And
did you really?
Yeah. I try to keep that quiet, but it's hard to imagine someone as cool as myself could have done that. But what I learned about volunteerism is that, you know, because I was being prepared for the military, mm-hmm. that I learned that when someone asks you to volunteer, you take a step back. Otherwise, you get shot at.
Yeah, I guess that was
so,
a little bit different.
So I might have taught the wrong values to my kids, but my son has a picture on a Facebook. He doesn't look very happy. I was looking at this the other night, and what it says here, I just realized that I haven't raised enough money for prostate awareness, and my wife won't kiss me. So the mother of my grandchildren mm-hmm. making the kids go out and volunteer is making my son do the same thing.
That's smart.
So, I think it's good for everybody at every age, you know, to get out there and to volunteer. Why? Because you're kind of passing it on. And
exactly.
Well, I think the more you give, the more you get in return is
exactly.
what I'm hearing from you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just like the fact that there are so many different options, and maybe we could talk a little bit about that, you know, now and into the next segment a little bit, because I think when people think about volunteering, especially for hospice. Now, VITAS Hospice mm-hmm. is obviously one of the best here in San Diego and actually in the country. So they've got this down pat. But at the same time, you're thinking about volunteering for hospice, and you might think, well, I'm not comfortable interacting with patients mm-hmm. directly and doing those types of...
And there definitely are people that want to help the whole movement, but are a little intimidated with working mm-hmm. directly with patients and mm-hmm. families. We have administrative opportunities where people can come into the office, more behind the scenes types of things.
And you organize all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
We have volunteers that will sew teddy bears out of clothing that belong to the patients
our
family, our memory bear program, so they can do that in their home. People that knit can knit blankets. They can knit scarves, booties, things along those lines to be able to provide comfort. We have volunteers that sew bags for wheelchairs and walkers to promote independence. We have a lot of elementary schools that we work with that for every holiday make cards. You know, mm-hmm. who doesn't love to receive a Thanksgiving card or a Christmas card or mm-hmm. Mother's Day or Father's Day?
Made from a little kid.
Drawn all out of the lines and mm-hmm. colored, but it's adorable and it really brings, you know, comfort and joy to people.
Yeah, so for our audience, you know, you may not think you have a skill, but there's actually, you actually absolutely have something to offer at some level to someone in need.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we're going to continue this conversation. We got to take a quick break, but stay with us. We'll be right back with Alex talking more about volunteering in San Diego.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right. I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com. Or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
When it comes to treatment of heart disease, there are many choices, but there's no better choice than Alvarado Hospital, right here, close to home. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist with Alvarado Hospital. I am proud that our specialists bring a level of knowledge, skill, and technology that have greatly improved the lives of those in our community for the past 40 years. For more information about our cardiovascular and stroke services, please visit alvaradohospital.com or call 1-800-ALVARADO.
Alvarado is proud to be part of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
Okay, welcome back, listeners. We're here with Alex Silva, who's the manager of volunteerism at VITAS. You know, earlier you were talking about, you know, volunteering for hospice, but there's all sorts of opportunities out there, including your local schools, YMCA, churches. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about, you know, what else is coming up that people can get involved with volunteerism?
Absolutely. You know, pretty much any type of area out in our community could use assistance. Like you mentioned, there is the Boy Scouts, there are the YMCA. Schools, I think, are a phenomenal place for people to volunteer, whether it be in their children's classrooms or not. You know, just going and finding a local school, I think, is always a great thing.
Who should they contact at the organization? I mean,
most organizations have somebody defined to either manage their volunteers, whether it be a volunteer manager unto itself or as part of somebody else's responsibilities is to manage and, you know, do all the recruiting and training for the volunteers to get them going.
Should the volunteer, have an agenda of what he wants to do or just show up and say, what do you need help with and what can I do or what's the best way to...
I think both. I think, you know, a lot of people, what drives them to volunteer sometimes is going to be what organization they are connected with. What's the mission statement of that organization, and do they feel drawn to that? Mm-hmm. That's where they're going to find their best volunteers from, and I think their best experience as a volunteer. So going in and with the question of, you know, what can I do to help? Sure, I think that's really great because it totally opens it up for any possibility. But I think also if you kind of have something in mind, like, you know, I was an accountant in my professional career. I'm retired now and would still like to stay involved with that somehow.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I think that numbers you person.
Can exactly. You can definitely be more focused in your roles that way.
So what, I mean, besides knowing somebody, what exactly drew you to hospice?
What drew me to hospice? I had my grandfather that passed away under mm-hmm. VITAS care up in the Inland Empire. And
My grandma did too, and she was with VITAS.
Is that right?
We're in Inland Empire.
Up in kind of the Canyon Crest area in Riverside. So.
Riverside, okay.
Yeah.
We were Glendora.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was really what opened my eyes to hospice. I knew a little bit about it as a respiratory therapist, but not a whole lot. And I just saw the great care that they provided, and we were fortunate enough to have volunteers that came out and assisted my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And so,
wow,
yeah,
that's great.
And that really kind of
that's
made
a special
a bit
person
of a
to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
it's because it's really kind of hard. A lot of people have trouble dealing with other people that are dying.
Absolutely, and a lot of the people that volunteer with us, a majority of them, I think, have had some type of hospice experience or have lost someone. And know what it's like and how difficult it can be to be a caregiver mm-hmm. and to need some assistance sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think others are just looking to be able to reach out, try something different, and definitely learn something about themselves through that process. So whether they've had experience or not and come in through orientation, you know, we prepare them to be able to work with patients that are going through that active phase of dying. And
I think the biggest problem is that as a society, we don't call hospice early enough because, we think that it's a matter of giving up. When my mother-in-law passed away, it was amazing how much comfort and how much they helped with the whole process, with child support, psychological support from my grandson, and just bringing supplies over to the house. And the biggest problem was we called them in a week before she passed away. Right. We should have brought them in months before that she passed
right.
away.
When you think that really the prognosis of 6 months or less is kind of the benchmark, and I think we're probably down to about a 14-15 day average length of stay for your average hospice patient, which just shows you how many late referrals we're receiving that's bringing that 6 month number down.
And well, you know, as a physician, you know, you never want to give up. And, my son told me, you know, call in hospice the weeks before I called him. It's, you don't need to. Mm-hmm. She's going to live forever. And, refusal to accept it kind of gets in the way. So for our listeners who have loved ones that are terminal, I would say, call in hospice, call in VITAS hospital, mm-hmm. hospice sooner rather than later, because they're not only for the volunteerism, but for all the other services they can provide to make the whole process a more loving and friendly and
Absolutely.
Comfortable
Absolutely.
Process.
And like you mentioned, it is support for the patient, but equally for the family. We do look at it as the patient and family as kind of the same type of unit that we're offering that care.
Oh, the family needs huge support.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. And that's where I think the volunteers can really come in and help by staying with the patient, allowing the caregiver to get out and go to the grocery store, run some errands.
Just kind of be
lunch,
there.
You know, sometimes just lay down and take a nap and recharge mm-hmm. their battery, knowing that somebody is there with them mm-hmm. Should something arise. And for our patients that may be in facilities, you know, unfortunately, you tend to see a lot of families not come around as frequently, or maybe we have patients that have no families at all. We definitely want to try to focus our volunteers on those patients to be able to offer support, companionship, to be able to go out, read, write letters, play games, you know, just spend a little bit of time one-on-one with them.
And, you know, in some cases it becomes, you know, a way to make new friends too. I mean, these are always benefits to volunteering. Like over where I am over at Villa Las Palmas, we were talking about that earlier. We have a lot of people that, you know, their loved one was with us for a while, or even they have been with us through like maybe a knee surgery or just a way for them to go through rehab quickly. But then they come back and want to do activities with residents that are still there, you know, any of our guests that are there now. So it's just kind of a cool way to see it come full circle.
Absolutely. You know? One of my volunteers once told me that what he really likes most about working with our patients is he gets to become somebody's new best friend.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of quote that a lot.
What are some of the other things that your volunteers get out of the process?
I think just, like I said, the reward of being able to assist somebody through that process. We do a lot of different internships, so if somebody is needing educational aspect of it, we can assist with that. On-the-job experience, we get a lot of med students.
Oh, that makes students sense.
That are wanting to gain patient experience.
That's smart.
I think it's a great way for them to be able to do that. Even if they haven't applied into a nursing or a physician's program yet, they've already got that a little under their belt. So they, again, they're putting that on their application process, and it's showing not only that they're volunteering, but in a really, really unique way.
Yeah, for our younger listeners, that's a great way to set them apart from other applicants for whatever, whether you're applying for a job, we're going to a university. You know, that shows that, you know, you're a special individual and you have other things to offer.
Definitely. I do a lot of letters of recommendations for those students, and three of them actually emailed me back and said during their interview process that that was really a focus of the conversation, and they believe that that's what helped contribute to them getting accepted into that program. I was like, wow.
Nice. And I mean, it would show a couple other things too. If people, you know, younger kids are doing it for a while, it shows longevity, essentially like a job. And a lot of places won't hire you until you're 18. You know, so this is something that you can do a little bit younger, get a head start on everybody else. And also if you're going into something or think you want to go into something but aren't quite sure and, you know, you throw yourself into it, it's a good way to figure out if that is really what you're passionate about.
Exactly. You know? A lot of times we'll have parents and their children volunteering together. And I think that intergenerational gap, it really does bridge that gap between our patients and the kids. I mean, put any young person into a facility and the residents light up, you know? So I think to bring that in is a great thing.
Now, some people may be concerned about the time commitment. I'll wait till I retire. How much time does someone have to really donate to a volunteer in general?
It's going to vary by organization. Generally, they're, you know, want to make it as flexible as possible. There generally is some type of minimum requirement for a weekly basis, but they try to work with your own schedule. For us, as an example, you know, as long as somebody is, let's say they're visiting patients, they're making that visit to that patient once a week, then the day of the week, the time of day, and how long they're there is really up to their availability and kind of how it's going with that patient. Some organizations do require maybe a 6-month commitment or a year commitment. But as far as the hours of week, I think all of us, you know, are happy to accept whatever somebody is willing to offer.
I mean, is it 2 hours? Is it 10 hours?
It can be as little as 2 hours a week. It can be as many as 20 hours a week. It really depends upon what people are interested in doing.
And then sometimes there are events, too. Weren't you saying there's something coming up now?
Absolutely. There's a lot of different events, especially here in San Diego during the summer. We host a lot of walks here, whether it be like AIDS Walk that's coming up or the Memory Walk for Alzheimer's. Leukemia Lymphoma Society, things along those lines. So that's a great way for people to do a volunteer opportunity and achieve it all in one day. You know, you can volunteer for a few hours. You can volunteer for the entire event. If you contact the organizations, you can help with some of the stuff ahead of time. If you're not, let's say maybe you wanted to participate in the walk itself, then you could volunteer ahead of time, putting mailers together, putting flyers together, getting things ready for the actual event itself. Tomorrow for 9/11, they actually started to create this whole thing, a National Day of Service. So they're really trying to get people to take action within your community. And so if you look on pretty much any volunteer website, Volunteer Match is a really great one. Justvolunteers.com as well. You'll see a lot of different opportunities that are available, and they're really featuring some that are one time only that will be happening tomorrow.
Isn't there an organization called Volunteers of America?
Yeah, Volunteers of America does help out.
What is that?
They help out a lot in smaller communities. They also do a lot of things nationwide.
Okay.
Also, and going into other countries as well. They do have a lot of different volunteer opportunities as well. Definitely something to check out.
Well, I actually did volunteer once. You know, it kind of jogged a memory when I was applying to medical school. I realized it would be a good idea.
That's a good tell.
Yeah, so I volunteered at a YMCA Boy Scout camp. And this was in State College, Pennsylvania.
Nice.
That's great.
And I was helping in the first aid
building. That's a good, yeah.
Except the guy running it, it was a great experience, seeing his expertise. But he knew I was there kind of, patting my resume, I guess, so to speak.
Well, sometimes it works out. It's a win-win for both parties.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
That's the goal.
Yeah, and I had a good experience. And then one day I was sitting in the hut, so to speak, and lightning hit the line. And the lightning came down. We were in the building, and it came into the building where I was at and exploded. I thought I had died.
Wow.
Everything went white. So, but I got a chance to see what it's like to almost get hit by lightning, smell ozone.
Proud of.
And so that was my volunteer experience. Nothing to do with your presentation, but I think that's the end of the segment.
Yes,
that's
it
a good
is.
Time
Let's
to end it.
Stay with us. We'll be right back with Alex.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right, I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays, and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com. Or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
Welcome back to Aging Redefined. As today we're talking with Alex Silva about volunteering, who's the head volunteer coordinator, manager, everything. You just kind of run the show over there for that, for VITAS Hospice.
And he gets paid to
love.
Do it.
Yeah,
it's even better.
You did a great job. Well, at the end of the last segment, Dr. Ember, you were talking about volunteering and saying what you were doing for... And like when you were in medical school,
yeah, but I'm trying to get into medical school. I've done YMCA circa 67, 69.
That's really dating yourself a little bit.
They still had Boy Scouts back then.
Oh, did they?
I think
when you guys were like using rocks to really create fire?
Flint Rock.
So mean.
I never learned how to do that.
Really?
Yeah, but the Boy Scouts could do it.
I was not in Girl Scouts or anything like that. Though looking back, I would have liked to be because of the whole cookie thing. That's a really big draw for me.
Have you ever been a volunteer?
I have. I did some volunteer. Actually, over the past few years, I got involved. I was a public speaker for a little while. So I toured the country around and did talk to women particularly about starting businesses and being passionate about things because I'm a very passionate person. I'm just excited all the time. But the volunteer work I ended up doing really gravitated towards young women and really encouraging them to be strong and independent. And I did some volunteer work with a group called Girls Inc., Girls Incorporated. And I think they're all over the country, but I was focused in Orange County because that's really where I spent most of my time. I'm brand new to San Diego, but it was a really great group. And they've got girls from, you know, really young, kindergarten maybe, and then growing up all the way throughout high school. So I worked with them for a little bit, just making sure that they want to go to college and focus them on education and working and teaching them all those great things. So it was an amazing experience. And I remember they did one event where they brought in a bunch of prom dresses and it was like a massive, they got to pick out their dress and girls that were kind of underprivileged dresses and
that's great.
You know, earrings and everything, their makeup. And then they actually got to go to prom.
Tell me about the smiles on their faces when they,
it's unreal and it makes you just so happy that you did it, that you want to do it again. So I feel like they need to sign you up while you're there for the next time that you're going to volunteer. Cause you're just on this high with how great it is, you know, and then you come home and you're like, oh, I gotta go back to my regular routine, you know, making your phone calls, doing your business and whatever it takes. But it is an amazing thing.
So Alex, why don't you tell us about the health benefits of being a volunteer?
Yeah, you know, there really are a lot of health benefits and the research is out there to support it. Rush University actually did a study and looked at elderly volunteers and the health benefits that they're really receiving because they are connecting with the purpose of that organization versus younger volunteers that are maybe doing it as a sense of obligation or a requirement. If you are wanting to volunteer, that is the big difference in it. It's stated that it can help to decrease someone's depression and loneliness and obviously isolation because they're interacting with others.
Sure.
Help with chronic pain. If somebody is suffering from chronic pain, this can be a way to, again, looking beyond themselves and helping somebody else will help to decrease that chronic pain for them. Increases level of happiness, life satisfaction, and improves self-esteem. I actually have a few volunteers that are working with us that they're a healthcare professional. Encourage them to be able to volunteer to help combat the depression that they were dealing with. Mm. And so one of them did not think that she could do it. And how can I, you know, volunteer in a hospice organization to help me with my depression? Mm-hmm. So she knew how to sew. She picked up, you know, the memory bear pattern and is making those bears and really finds the creative outlet and putting those together as a total therapeutic way for her to be able to work through that depression. And so it's really helped her tremendously.
Nice.
So I think volunteer, what you're saying, will get more out of it for themselves than what they put in.
Completely. You're benefiting the organization, but I really think as an individual, you're benefiting yourself, you know, tenfold. Appreciation is something that we all try to focus on in volunteer administration. And, you know, from a thank you, which to me is probably what goes the farthest, you know, to a thank you card, mm-hmm. to maybe a appreciation luncheon or something along mm-hmm. those lines. But really, I tell people, you see a volunteer, first thing that should come out of your mouth is thank you for volunteering with us mm-hmm. in any organization, in any situation, whatever it may be. I'll walk around, I volunteer at AIDS Walk, and I'll look for the other volunteers and just thank them for volunteering, and I'm not even leading the volunteers within that, you know, event.
Right. And San Diego is such a really cool place to volunteer. I mean, having been in LA and Orange County, I feel like San Diego's small. Like it's a small community and mm-hmm. everybody kind of gets to know each other in different groups. You know, you might see one volunteer somewhere and they're participating in other events as well. So it's really a good way to get to know people in the community. And like we were talking about earlier, making friends and
Yeah, and there's, like I mentioned earlier, the different websites that are available. There is an organization, the Volunteer Action Network, here in San Diego, and it is designed for volunteer managers from different organizations all across the board throughout the county. Mm-hmm. And we're always doing our best to try to continue our education on recruiting volunteers and how to motivate, you know, people to continue coming back, coming up with new programs, and spreading the word about volunteering and what's available in the community.
And can anybody volunteer? I know that we've talked about different ages, and obviously Dr. Emder's got his grandkids out there, but what are some of the requirements for
it depends upon the different organizations. Sometimes, depending upon what they're doing, there may be an age requirement. There is always some type of an orientation that needs to be done for anywhere you're going to volunteer. Mm-hmm. It could be, include an application, some type of interview, reference checks, perhaps. Definitely background checks. You know, with our organization, we do background screening on all of our volunteers. They're going to be working with patients. Mm-hmm. Some type of HIPAA, perhaps, you know, regulations, making sure that you're keeping everything confidential. Mm-hmm. And really looking at what type of program you're going to be getting into, not only organization, but maybe a narrower program within that organization, and what may be required education-wise so that you know what to do in that role. I think our biggest challenge is to make sure that we are training volunteers, getting them educated so that they're comfortable and are really feeling that benefit.
Okay. You know, I was going to ask you, you'd said, obviously, with this website, do you have advice for people that might live in kind of rural areas and how they can volunteer as well?
Absolutely. And that's always a challenge, not only for the volunteers, but I think almost even more so for the volunteer managers of those organizations. Because in rural areas, you know, you're going to have to look at some type of driving that's going to be involved. Mm-hmm. So that is probably one of our biggest challenges. If you look at any type of rural community, even here in San Diego, there's some type of a community center that's there. Go to the community center. That's a great place to be able to find resources to be able to help out, mm-hmm. whether it be to help clean up a park, to help clear a road, you know, something along those lines, helping within a school, within mm-hmm. the area. I think it's always available for us.
I'd like to give a shout out, actually, to my actually second cousin. Her name is Megan Spector.
So random.
So, you know, like, I don't do a lot of volunteerism, but luckily all my relatives do. So they kind of make up for me. But mm-hmm. she's 13 years old. Just to show you what you could do when you would put your mind to volunteering. She's 13 years old, and as part of her bar mitzvah project, she raised money for the ALS Foundation.
Wow.
And I think she raised like $20,000-$30,000.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
At age 13.
What's her name? No.
Megan Spector, and she lives in San Diego. Age 13, raised lots of money. And just for our audience, you know, when you put your mind to it, I mean, she was very passionate about the, you know, raising money for this particular disease. And 13, this is what she accomplished.
That's
think
incredible.
About for our audience what they could accomplish if they put their mind to it.
So with her realizing how successful she was at that, does that make her want to go into the career of maybe volunteering or nonprofit? Because Alex, weren't you saying earlier that now that is something that you can even, you know, major in college, right?
Absolutely. There are a few colleges throughout the country that actually have a degree in volunteer administration.
Wow.
Yeah, believe it or not.
There's probably a great market for that too.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a couple of independent organizations that offer certification processes as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually a certified volunteer administrator, and all of that is done through the Association of Volunteer Administration.
Yeah. So for our younger audience, they don't know what to do with their lives, and you know, you're worried about, you know, with job security, this is a great area. I mean, before you being on the show, I didn't even know this existed.
Oh, it's a whole world out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
I know it from brief periods, but also like golf tournaments and stuff. There's a lot of volunteering that goes around, but nifty.
Yeah.
I like it. Alex, this was pretty good. Like, I'm really excited about this. So I think you mentioned some websites, right?
Mm-hmm. For VolunteerMatch.com, JustVolunteers.com, mm-hmm. Volunteer Action Network. Just Google volunteer opportunities in your community, and a lot is going to come up for you.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And VITAS as well.
We can't
discredit that by any means. There sounds like there's some amazing opportunities, whether you are a seamstress or Great with computers, Photoshop, all sorts of stuff, right?
Absolutely. Working with patients, you have office skills. We would love to have you. We do our orientations every other month, and one is coming up in a couple of weeks.
Awesome. Okay, so if audience members out there would like to get a hold of you directly, do you have contact information?
Absolutely. They can contact me at 858-503-4724 or shoot me an email at alexander.silva@vitas.com.
Very nice. Okay. And Dr. Emder?
I'm in my office at 619-286-8803. I don't know what I'm doing there.
But, you're usually pretty busy.
I'm usually in the hospital, but if you want to call and chat, you know, I'm happy to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Or I have a website, Healthy Aging Medical Associates. Mm-hmm. We're still waiting for that first call.
Yeah.
So I hope someone in the audience, maybe the fifth listener, which is my wife, will call soon.
Oh, and you are on Facebook as well with me,
yeah.
Aging Redefined Radio. Check us out over there. And in addition, we have a podcast, so feel free to download that. You can listen to any of our shows, including this one, in your car, whenever the mood suits you, which is lovely. So, hopefully you can check us out there. If you've got any other questions, shoot us a message on Facebook, or you can email me directly at kvallone@plumh.com. That's kvallone@plumh.com. And we will talk to you next week. Thanks so much for joining us.
You've been listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone.